Are you a Western?
Welcome to Moe's Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. Today is Wednesday, the 17th of April, 2024, and I am Mo Abdelbaki. I don't know why I'm talking like that. I have a tendency to do that, just to, just to make it a big deal when it really isn't all that big a deal. But then again, it is the 17th of April, 2024, and there's only one of those ever. So maybe it is a big deal. Maybe it is. Maybe it is. And you know what? I kind of feel like it is. I think every day is a big deal. I wake up and go, oh, cool. And I do it pretty much just like that. So how are you? I hope you're doing very, very well. I'm doing well. And, well, I'm doing well. Well. Hey, it's good to see you. Yes, I can see you, all of you, all at once as a collective, and I can see into your minds. That's enough of that. It was enough of that before it started, wasn't it? Yes, the 17th of April already. The year is a quarter done. And, I guess I should turn over being a quarter done. But that's a different story altogether. Make sure you use your SPF. Trust me. Make sure you use your SPF. That's fine. Thank you and welcome again. So here we are. It occurred to me at the end of last week's show, about 5 minutes after, which is always helpful, that I hadn't finished my idea about the eclipse. I suppose I kind of ended on a sour note there, or a sad note, saying that, and there shall be war, and they shall smite each other. That's not how I meant to end. So the whole point is that the final aspect of this eclipse is that there will be good stuff coming. So remember I said that there would be a status quo, and the status quo shall be... essentially, the status quo shall be that there will be kind of more of the same. We're seeing that right now, right? We're seeing that there's still kind of a sense of people clobbering each other and that sort of thing. We're human beings. That's what human beings do. That's my land. No, it isn't. It's my land. It was my land a long time ago. Well, it's my land now. That sort of thing. And it's all ridiculous, and it's all foolish. This earth is nothing but a ship of fools, hurtling through space at a very, very quick pace, 33 kilometers per second, as they say. And spinning on its axis at 24,000 miles per hour, that's a lot of movement. You would think that we would kind of slow down and say, why are we moving so quickly? And to us, it doesn't seem that way, but we really are hurtling through space, and that's the nature of time. So the ending of this thing that I saw, that I worked with the I Ching with and without, was that we will have a breakthrough, and it will be a positive breakthrough, like a tulip breaking through the ground in the springtime. So I'm hoping that that's going to be the case. The I Ching is never wrong. It hasn't been wrong yet. So I'm very hopeful, extremely hopeful. So I didn't get to that part because I ended up wandering around, la-di-da-di-da, I do that. I can get in the way of my own thoughts sometimes, There's nothing usually wrong with that until there is something wrong with that. And that's just the way that is. And some of that as well. So I hope that clarifies that I did want to end on a negative note, because there are things that do seem to be negative, and there are some things that seem to be, kind of ambiguous. I don't see a lot of ambiguity in the world, frankly. There are people who like to dangle themselves over the abyss of, let's say moral ambiguity, although I don't think there really is such a thing as moral ambiguity, quite frankly. I just don't think there is such a thing. There's right and there's wrong, and most of us have a pretty good idea of what is what, We can usually say, it just doesn't seem to be a good thing to do. And we usually get a feel for it. Does the world confuse you? It does confuse me. I just can't understand why people do what they do. I can't understand why they act the way they act. I just am not sure of things. I was saying to my wife today that I felt like I was born into the wrong world at the wrong time. And she doesn't buy that. She thinks that I have selective thinking, that I could have made it anywhere if I just would select to put my energies here or there, or everywhere, as it would. And I just don't buy it. I mean, I've never really kind of fit into that mainstream. I've been okay, I've kind of made it in my own way. I've fit myself in, had to sand off some of the weird edges and so on. But, I bet you're the same way. You kind of think, I don't get it. I don't get why things are the way they are. I don't get why there is this insistence on fighting and greed and obfuscation and on duplicity and incredible competition. I don't know. But that's the way the world is. And I don't know. Oh, well, enough of that for now. Enough of that for now. I wanted to start off today and tell you a story. Now, pull up a chair. No voices. I promise no voices. What was I doing the other day? And I was talking to my wife. I was going to talk to tell her something, and I was going to do a voice. And she said, don't do a voice. And I said, was I doing a voice? She said, yes. I thought, okay, I won't do a voice. I used to do voices for my kids. I did voices for my little brothers when I told them stories. So it's just something I guess I've always kind of done, is done voices. And it was very clear that the voice was not a welcome part of the presentation that I was about to do. So I won't do a voice now because I don't know which voice I had to do. Come on, sit down. Anyway, this is a story, one of my favorite stories. Now, this is a story about a magician. This magician was, this happened, supposedly a true story. Now, I don't know if it is or not, but it's supposedly a true story. And it's about a magician in England back in the late 1800s. And this was a very powerful magician. And he agreed to take on a student. Now, when a magician takes on a student, it's a pretty big deal. He takes on an apprentice, and his apprentice was a mouse. Big ears, No, I'm kidding. So he took an apprentice on, and the apprentice was a little bit impetuous. Now, there's generally nothing wrong with that. You know, you want someone who's got a good sense of steam under his hat. You know, someone who has a good feeling for what's what, and someone who is going to pay you. You know, when you're a magician, because magicians have a tendency to be rather hard up for money. And you might say to yourself, so why is that? If you're a magician, aren't you going to ask for money? No. You're going to, pull on the fabric of the time-space continuum a little bit to try and bring finances to you. But you're never, ever, 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 ever going to say, oh, universe, I want money. There's so many stories about that. Midas, for example. The Monkey's Paw is a great story about asking for the buckaroos, and what can happen when that goes on. It's actually, I've known people who have asked for money, and they've gotten it, and it hasn't worked out well. Not for anyone. Money takes hard work. And this is one of those stories, it's possible to do. People do it all the time. And you see that it's traditionally not done because there's an unpredictability to asking for anything physical. And that includes people. You can say, I want so-and-so. I want somebody. Now, do I want to be this personal? Oh, what the heck? I'm almost 70. If not now, when, right? I suppose I may write a book eventually about the strange things that have happened to me in my life. Might even be an interesting book. Then again, it might be just a me, one of those things. But then again, it might be interesting. It might. I've seen and I've known some very, very interesting people. Have I met some unique human beings. Some rather frightening, to be quite honest. I may have mentioned before that I have a friend who said, Mo, you should write a book about some of the people that you've met. Some of those people who have been, on the less than Yahoo side. And I think, no, I'm not going to write about those types of people because I don't see any reason to extol their virtues, so to speak. But he keeps pushing me. Come on, write about this guy. Write about that person. I was like, nah. Why do that? But anyway, so this magician, he took on an apprentice. And the guy was really kind of, full of himself, and he thought he had an immense amount of potential. And the magician said, so what we're going to do is we're going to meet every week. And I will teach you. And he said, but the one thing you have to do is listen to what I tell you. And we're going to start with a few simple lessons, and then we're going to work forward from that. He said, but it's going to take some time, and you have to be patient. So the apprentice said, okay, I'll do that. So they began working, and pretty quickly, this kid was really he was in his 20s. And he began to catch on very quickly, and the magician was quite pleased with his progress. So off they were. And the kid decided that what he wanted to do was manifest money. He said, I want to manifest money. And so he holed himself up in his apartment, his flat, as they say, over there. And he got together the right accoutrement, and he began the work. And he began doing the things that one does. And nothing. 1 week went by, and he's working himself into a frenzy. and nothing's happening. He drew the pentagrams. He drew the nonagrams. And yet, this is something you may not have gotten to in your studies yet. He drew an enneagram. Well, not exactly, but he drew a nonagram, and he drew an 11-sided figure, and he called the proper entities, and nothing, not a thing happened. Week two comes, and week two goes. Nothing has happened. And he's specifically trying to create a 100-pound note, or 100 pounds. He just says, this is what I want to create. And he's burning the incense, and he's banging on the gong, or ganging the bong, which is a completely different thing, and came much later in the 70s. So he's doing this, and to no avail. And his landlady is getting quite frustrated with him. Now, he's not eating. He's not doing much of anything. And he's looking terrible. You know, he hasn't taken a bath. He's, you know, just really disheveled. Week three comes and goes, and week four, nothing. So finally, he's completely despondent. He finally decides he better go talk to his master, you know, his teacher, his magician. And he cleans himself up, not much. He looks disheveled. He looks terrible, like an unmade bed. And he goes down the flight of stairs, opens up the door, walks out onto the street, and there in front of him, right there on the ground in front of him, is a 100-pound note just lying there, just unbelievable. So he reaches down, picks it up, lets out a huzzah, because they are in England in the late 1800s, lets out a mighty huzzah and just whoops and hollers and runs as fast as he can to his master's house. Says, I did it, I did it, I did it. Knocks on the door, and the magician's maid, you know, he's not that rich, but he could afford a maid. Now, what's that say about society, especially back then? There's something wrong. It was Victorian. See? Look at what I did. I got off track. Anyway, so she lets him in and brings him into the study. I mean, the guy obviously had some money, right? Sits him down. And the guy is just looking rumpled and kind of smells, you know. And the magician just looks at him and says, where have you been? And he says, well, I've been working. And I did this. I created money. I created a 100-pound note. Look. And he snaps it in front of him and says, I created this. I created this. And he said, really? And he says, yes. And he tells him all about it and what he used. And he used this and he used that. And dragon's blood, don't get excited. No dragons were hurt. It's just red ink. Okay. And he says, so what? He says, what do you mean, so what? He said, well, first of all, you didn't let me know what was going on. So I sat here at the appointed time. We're supposed to meet every week, right? And you didn't show up. So I was worried about you. Right? And as a matter of fact, I sent someone over to make sure you were okay. And they knocked on the door and you didn't answer. So I wondered if you were still alive or not. I was able to use Tarot and find out that you were still alive. But man, you can't do that to me. Right? He said it all with an English accent, by the way. So, you know, they go through this thing and the guy says, but look, I created this 100-pound note. And so he says, well, that's wonderful. Can I see it? He said, yes, of course. So he hands it over to him, and he takes the 100-pound note, and he said, well, this is actually mine. He said, what do you mean? He said, you owe me 100 pounds. It's 25 bucks, 25 pounds a week, right? Isn't that, which is a fortune back then. Believe me, that's a ton of money. But this guy was famous, you know. I mean, you can guess who it is. I'm not going to say. But he says, this is 25 pounds, and that's what you owed me. And how much, by the way, at your job that you didn't go to, how much do you make every week? Well, he said, well, I make 50 pounds, because this guy was upper crust, you know, working for the family. So, in other words, you lost 100 pounds. He says, well, yes. He says, I actually did. He said, you're a fool, and you're no longer my apprentice. Now, get out. So, that's the story, right? Of course, the moral is, never create by magic that which you can do by any other method, all right? So therein is the story. And the real aspect of this, the real point of this, has to do with the concept of patience. I love that story. I've loved it from the first time I read it. And it's supposedly true. Now, I don't see why it couldn't be true. My son, when he was a kid, found money everywhere we went. And I mean everywhere we went. It was just something that he expected to have happen. We would go somewhere and he would find money. And sometimes it was dollar bills. Sometimes it was 20 bucks. He found a $50 bill once, you know. And he said, this is going to be like this the rest of my life. I said, now don't bet on that, you know. And I'm talking, he was 5, 6, 7 years old. And eventually that ended. You know, he was kind of surprised. But I wasn't. Because these aren't the types of things that last forever. But the mindset of his mind was so sure about it that it just happened. There's a kind of magic there. But impatience is something that can really damage our lives. I was a very impatient kid, and it made me miserable, miserable. My dad would say, do you have any patience? And I'd say, I don't think I do, which made him very angry. But that's the key. I want to talk about that today. This guy, the magician's sorcerer's apprentice, you know, the mouse, he wasn't really a mouse, but you get the drift. I'm glad I didn't do a voice. I was thinking about doing Jimmy Stewart. You know, that's why I didn't do Jimmy Stewart. This idea of patience is something that we generally lack. And nature is ultimately patient. Nature is incredible in its ability to pick its own timing and to follow through with it in a way that is remarkable. It really is remarkable. There is something about it that is truly lovely. Time means nothing to nature, and yet it is everything to it. We have a real problem with waiting for something. That's just kind of how it is. If you look at certain cards in the tarot, they can echo this idea. For example, the Two of Swords in tarot is called Peace. And its name in the old version of decks, like the Golden Dawn, it's the Peace Restored. And Crowley very correctly says, well, when was peace upset? It's only the two, you know? So, and it's like, yeah, that's a good point. In my deck, the deck that I designed, which, by the way, is still available. If you go to moabdelbaki.com and there's a place that says tarot deck for sale and you have to order it. You can order it. You have to print it. It's not like, you know, it's not available like on Amazon or anything like that. You have to just order it. It comes from overseas. They print it and then they send it to you from across a very large pond. And so it takes a little while, but they're beautifully printed. But my Two of Swords is a bonsai tree. And the swords are the scissors, the little scissors that they use. Because that, to me, it's about peace. That's peaceful. But there's a very strong sense of patience that's involved in bonsai. I saw a really cool documentary on that once. My dad had a colleague when he had took a sabbatical out to the West Coast to Stanford. And that was my first year of college. And he did a thing where he'd go to Berkeley every week and work at a vet clinic out there with a guy who had bonsai trees. And they were amazing because they were like oak trees and elm trees. And I mean, it was really quite fascinating. I didn't get to see him. My dad told me about him. And this feller, he had this very lucrative practice long before veterinarians were making lots of money. He said it was the most amazing thing in the world because he would sometimes wait 6, 7, 8 weeks to make one snip on a branch, and sometimes longer because you had to know exactly what you were doing, and he would wait all that time before he would even make one little snip, you know. And I thought, man, that is patience. But nature is even more patient and more incredible. And when you think about, like, we have to wait for the rains, and we have to wait for grain to come up. I mean, at a time of famine, our ancestors, they couldn't rush it. And now, look what we're doing as a race, you know, as a species, I should say. We're GMOs, right? We're feeding cattle and creatures that we eat. We're feeding them grain that makes them grow more quickly. There's hormones in the food. I mean, how smart is this? I know that we have to feed this incredible population of human beings, of 8-9 billion people, and it's going to just get to be more and more and more. We have to feed them some more. And we have to do it quicker, faster, higher, you know. And we can't wait, I guess. I don't know. There's something about it that just, this lack of patience for me is a remarkable thing. I've seen it ruin relationships. I've seen it ruin everything. I've seen it ruin people, their standard of living, their ethical and moral standards. I've seen it ruin their sanity. Patience and being calm about things and waiting is a form of nourishment. If you can just wait and nourish yourself on what? So if you don't, what do you have to nourish yourself with? Well, you can nourish yourself on classical thought. You can nourish yourself on the past. You can nourish yourself on education, on what you do know. You can nourish yourself on different types of foods. You know, I mean, it's really you have to think it over. You have to think about it. You have to contemplate it. I've talked about this before. Contemplation and meditation are two very different things. Meditation is, generally speaking, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, I suppose, is a mechanical sort of thing. When you meditate, what you are doing is you are focusing upon a mantra or a mandala or whatever it may be, and you are doing that with the goal of allowing the mind to essentially empty, to find it in a place of, I like to think of it as weightlessness. That's how it seems to me. I found myself in a meditation recently, sitting around a campfire on the plains. It felt like I was alone. It was cold. I had a blanket over me. It might have been a skin of an animal. I don't know. The wind was blowing a little bit. And the campfire was not really lit very much. I mean, it was going, but it was more coals and embers, and it didn't feel very warm at all, but it didn't matter. But I knew where I was, sitting on a rock, somewhere out on the plains, and although I knew that I was me, you know, sitting in my house meditating, I was also on the plains, sitting next to a campfire, and I was alone, and there didn't seem to be anyone else there, and I felt like maybe I was an indigenous person in some other time, in some other place. But that's not the purpose of meditation. So you know what I did? I went right back to my mantra and let it go, because that's the purpose of meditation. When that comes up, you just kind of go back to the meditation and you just forget about that. Although I didn't forget about it at all. It was startling, but it was a remarkable feeling. It was a beautiful feeling. But you experience it and you go on and you get back to that feeling of weightlessness. And that is what it feels like, you know? Now, contemplation is a different sort of thing. That's when you just sit and you mull things over and you let them come and go. Or you grind something down like you're a grist mill, but mentally, you see? And that takes time. That takes time. I cast an I Ching. I asked a question. And I asked that question weeks ago. And I'm still contemplating the answer. Because the first thing the I Ching did was insult me, kind of. It didn't really insult me. It just kind of scolded me like... I consider the I Ching to be like an uncle. A loving, kindly... uncle, my Uncle Yi. And Uncle Yi, right off the bat, the first moving line, said, "Really, Mo? Is this the question you're going to ask me? Really? Now, someone who's been doing this for a year, maybe 5 years, maybe 12 years, maybe 15 years, but 56 years of the I Ching, and this is what you ask me? Come on! What are you thinking? Who are you, Mo? What is between your ears? Pudding? Rice porridge? What is wrong with you?" That's what it did. And in doing so, I was a little bit stunned, because you don't expect any form of divination to thunk you on the head that quickly and that succinctly, but it does all the time. And so does the Tarot. When I read the Tarot, it always goes like, "Mo, you fool." But that's the beauty of these methods of these languages, these methods of communicating with the universe, with the divine, hence the term divination. And that's why, you know, I used to write a lot for Quora. It was a lot that I wrote for Quora. Hundreds and hundreds of answers. And frankly, I just got kind of burned out on it. Like, you know, I'm kind of done with that. It just... I every now and then I'll pick up my brain and answer a few questions, but for the most part, I don't. Maybe I should. I don't know. Most of the questions are just repeats of questions I've asked before. You know, someone today asked me, "Is the five-pointed star connected to the occult?" And it's like, oh, come on. on, man. How many times am I going to get asked that question? Yes, but also it's connected to the military. Do you know why? Because the five-pointed star is related to Mars. See? It's that simple. It's related to Mars. Why? We don't have time. It makes sense, doesn't it? Maybe it doesn't make sense to you. On the tree of life, Mars is connected to the number five. And so we go from there, you know. But it's just, you know, the Pentagon, Defense Department, the DOD, and so on and so forth. But the point is that patience is not actually one of the virtues, but it is a virtuous thing. Why? Because it teaches us something, and it becomes a form of nourishment itself. Now, the question I asked is beginning to come together in my mind. Everything about it is coming together, but it's still going to take me time. That's the beauty of the I Ching. That's why, and it was what I asked was kind of a yes or no question. And I know better. I really do. But, and that's what it was saying. It was saying, Mo, you really asked a question that was not genuine. Instead of asking a yes, no question, shouldn't you really have asked yourself, why am I asking this question in the first place? You dummy. You know? And I am asking that question. What was the true nature of my psyche that made me ask the question in the first place? And it's a remarkable thing to dive that deeply into your own feelings and into your own mind. It takes time and it takes patience. It really does. It's a remarkable thing. I wasn't always patient. As a matter of fact, it's something that it's taken a while. Now, what is patience based on? It's based on something that might truly surprise you. Patience is based upon certainty. Aha. Certainty. Now, worry can certainly get in there. Let's say you decide that you want to plant some jalapeno peppers. I made that decision, over a decade ago, that I wanted to plant my own jalapeno peppers. So we were at the nursery and bought some plants, and I bought myself, a basil plant too, you know. Do you know who knows how to deal with basil? C.A. Brooks. She is a basil queen. She makes pesto, and she's really amazing when it comes to basil. So I bought some basil, two or three plants, and I didn't know anything about it, and I didn't look up anything about basil, so I let it go to flower, and of course that isn't so good, you know. I was just eating the flowers. I mean, I just walked by and... that's a pretty purple flower. I'll just eat that, you know. Just not real smart. So, but I grew this jalapeno plant, and I knew it was a jalapeno plant because I've seen the leaves, and it was the sharp pointed leaves, which I always thought was beautiful. That nature says this thing is hot, you know. Which reminds me, I grew cherry peppers once, and I grew them in the vicinity of jalapeno peppers. This was decades ago, and I did not know that much about cross-pollination. Didn't know about Mendel's experiment, you know. And holy cannoli, was I surprised when I was out in the garden. There was this beautiful cherry pepper that I plucked off the plant and wiped off and just popped in my mouth and chewed on it. It was the hottest thing I'd ever eaten in my life. Wow, what a moment that was. Wake up, wake up, wake up. You know, that was really kind of something. But what a moment that was. Excuse me, I have to tell my computer to stop listening to me. Stop listening. No, it's still listening. I don't know what to do. Because that's what happened last time toward the end of the show. It started transcribing everything I said. Are computers getting too smart? Is that what's happening? I think that may be what's happening. Mine is smarter than I am. I'm stupid. And it really likes to keep that in mind. So, don't know what is going to happen. We'll find out toward the end of the show. I said something one day, and it just started writing down everything I was saying, you know. And it started talking in my ear, and I got very confused. So, anyway, we had this jalapeno plant. And I started growing it. Now, I knew it was going to be a jalapeno plant, right? So I was patient, and I was really good, and I was certain about it. And so I was not disappointed at all when it grew one jalapeno. And we later decided that that one jalapeno plant, that one jalapeno pepper that I ate, which was hotter almost than almost anything I'd ever eaten. I don't know why. It was really hot. But it was good. It tasted very nice. And it was screaming hot. It cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $60. So, but I was patient. But I had a certainty about it. And that $60 jalapeno with the fertilizer and the container and the, you know, the watering and the doting on it. And because my time means absolutely nothing, actually. But it was really something. So patience and certainty are very important. Now, what is certainty about? Well, when you stop and think about it, that may be the function of religion to some extent. To give people the certainty to not run amok, to not become totally lunatics, or to become total lunatics, or whatever the case may be. Certainty is a very important part of not losing it. So, think about that for a little bit. If you're not certain about things, what's going to keep you from just reaching out and trying this and trying that and treating, you know, what's going to keep you from doing that? For example, my story about the sorcerer's apprentice earlier. He knew he could manifest something. And I'm here to tell you, you can do it too. But how much energy are you putting into something that can be done elsewise? Just a very simple question. I've seen people who have decided to take up the arts and do things that they could do otherwise. And it's like, why are you doing this? Why are you putting this much energy into something that you can do in some other way? You know, a lot of that is like The Secret, that book, that movie, that, you know, tattoo. I've mentioned a gentleman I know, and he was a nice guy, who lost everything he owned because he wanted a shortcut to retirement. And that shortcut was to believe 100% with every fiber of his being that he was going to win the lottery, the big one. And so he took everything he had, liquidated it, his house, his car, his collection of everything he had, and put it into lottery tickets and played the lotto and lost everything he had. And then had to find reasons why it didn't work. I was one of those reasons, because I dared to say, I don't know about this. I was a grain of rice in his world of negativity. And there were some other people too. Now, some of you may believe that that's the truth, but the truth is that he could have just worked. He was on the road to retirement. He just wanted to knock about 5 years off of that. Instead, he destroyed his retirement plans to where now he'll have to work until he's well into his 80s, 70s, or late 70s, early 80s. Do you see what I'm getting at? The natural world and the metaphysical world are never meant to be exclusive of each other. They're meant to work hand in hand because they are not separate. They work together. And it takes patience. So when you're going to make a loaf of bread, you have to mix things together. You have to mix the eggs, if it has eggs, and some water, and the flour, and the yeast. And the yeast has something to eat, right, which is usually sugar. And then you have to mix it all together. And then you, at some point, you're going to knead it, right? Knead. Do you know that one time the word knight, as in Knight of the Round Table, was pronounced knicht? That's what I was told, anyway. And a knife was pronounced a knif. Knife. I like that. So you have to knead it. And boy, when my mom was teaching me to knead bread, she was like, no, don't stop. Keep kneading. Keep kneading. And I'm like, well, when do you know when it's done? When it's done, you know when it's done. And it's not done yet. And knead and knead and knead. And you have to have patience. You have to work it. You have to work it hard. And when it's done, it gives. And it's smooth. And it's silky. And it's lovely. Right? But if you don't knead it enough, then you don't have the right bread. You know that. If you've done any baking of any kind, and I don't bake much. I used to in the past. I used to make my own bagels, and they were wonderful. I used to actually make them into balls and poke a hole in the center, and I used to boil them. Oh, my goodness. And then I'd bake them. And they were absolutely delicious, and it took a while. It took a while to make them. It took, well, a couple hours. But they were remarkable. I used to make my own tortillas. They were wonderful. They weren't round, not by any stretch of the imagination, and I realized that it would take me years to figure out how to get them perfectly round. You know? And I didn't want to use a press. I wanted to learn to do it by hand. But I'm nuts that way. I want to learn how to do things. To me, it's really important. There are certain traditions that I love. Yeah, my mom made pita bread. And she made, you know, braided bread. She could make a bread basket that was a basket made out of bread with a handle. And then she'd make croissants, you know, croissant rolls. And they were, oh my God, they were delicious, layered with butter. And she'd put the croissants in the bread basket. Oh, my mom could cook. And she'd make mistakes, but she was patient. She was patient with cooking. Good boy, could she cook. But not always with me. I drove her nuts, you see. I drove her nuts. Of course, bread didn't talk back to her, you know. Bread wasn't an underachiever. So patience in life will reward you, but you have to have certainty. Now, when I have certainty about something, it rings true within me. It sounds like one of those bells. You know? It sounds like one of those wonderful bells. And you know what I'm talking about. You know? It sounds like this. When you know something, when you absolutely know it inside of you, and you know it's going to happen, and you know it's destined, and you know it's real, and you know it's 100%, and you know that there's no chance that it's going to go awry if things go the way that they can, it sounds like this. Yeah. And you know it. So all you have to do is sit back and live your life and not interfere with what's happening. You see? All you have to do is live your life. All you have to do is eat, drink, and be merry in the meantime. And be patient. Now, if it's something dealing with someone else, well, you're kind of at the mercy of that other person, aren't you? So that doesn't mean that it's always going to work out, because someone else may get nervous about it. You know? Someone else may say, I don't think I can wait any longer. Or someone else may say, nope, I just don't think it's going to happen. And you know it's going to. It's not a question of if, but when. And if you know you're certain something is going to happen, and you know it's just a matter of when, then it doesn't matter when, does it? But convincing other people of that is sometimes extremely difficult. Extremely difficult. You see, that is the problem. So it becomes incumbent on us to remain calm at all times and keep our arms and legs inside the vehicle. You know? Because if we're calm, usually other people will, but that's not always the case. Sometimes people begin to freak out. Sometimes they begin to become nervous that things aren't on the timetable that they want. The timetable to be. But patience is so important. I urge you, I really encourage you to develop a sense of understanding of the principles of being patient. Now, it doesn't mean you have to be patient all the time. It takes the fun out of things. There are times when anticipation and excitement are fine. Like standing in line for a movie you've been waiting 4 years to come out. Boy, when I was in line, I was in the first showing of The Empire Strikes Back. No one was going to ruin it for me. I was almost in the front of the line, you know? And I was right there. That was because I had been waiting for years. Years. Right there. And I was excited, and I was impatient, and I sat down, and it started, and I was one big goosebump. But I was young, and it was worth it. Yes, Nerd City. That was the same with the Indiana Jones franchise. The second one, I was so disappointed. It wasn't the first. I didn't think it was that good, you know. Kate Capshaw. Nothing against her, but it was just kind of what? But anyway, there are times to be excited and impatient, but when it comes to this life of ours, hold your truth inside. Let it ring like a bell. Truthfully, honestly, and you'll begin to hear when things are untrue, and you'll know when it's wrong. Okay? I swear to you. And never, ever do by magic what can be done otherwise. You know why? Because there's so much fun in learning how to do something. Like learning to knit. Or learning to draw. Or learning how to yo-yo. Or whittle. Or whistle through your teeth. Or whatever it may be. Life is amazing. Okay. That's this week. I hope you have a lovely week. A lovely, 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 lovely week. And until next week, this is Mo Abdelbaki in the Paisley Penny Arcade, where everything is just weird and wild all the time. Wishing you peace and love. I'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo Abdelbaki, and today is Wednesday, the 12th of July. July, yeah. 2023. Oh, the year is just speeding by, isn't it? Isn't it? Already the 7th month of the 23rd year of the 21st century. And to think just a moment ago I was in Mrs. Parsons' fifth grade class at Laurel Elementary in Fort Collins, Colorado. Okay, go ahead, those of you listening who want to steal my identity. I won't get you that far. And now that's been a challenge. And they'll go, yes, yes, I can do everything. Well, go ahead. I mean, really, it's the world today. Oh, the world today. Isn't it a sorry place? It's not that bad. It's weird. A lot of strange goings on. There are good people left in the world. There are good people left in the world, which was proven to me recently. Thank you again. You know who I'm talking to. So, what should we talk about today? How's the weather been? How are you feeling? How has your weather been? Wow. To those of you in Vermont, and I know that there are a couple of listeners in Vermont, Montpelier, and Vermont is a destination place. It's a destination state where people go to, like Colorado. People come to Colorado to see the mountains and to, you know, buy rock candy, because we have lots of mountains and lots of rocks, and they make candy that looks like rocks. And it's good. We have saltwater taffy in Estes Park, and of course, I'm not sure what that has to do with the mountains, but it's pretty good stuff. And in Montpelier, Vermont, they have flooding, and that's Vermont is the same sort of thing. A lot of tourism, and this is the most popular time of year to be there.